Welcome to Queer Radio, Gareth Watkins.
Thank you.
All the way from Wellington. Have you been?
Very busy, very busy. I've just been actually starting on a new documentary looking at the art of drag and drag queens. Just interviewed a chap last night who is 21, has been doing drag for 3 years. And I've got another interview coming up in a couple of days' time with a chap that's been doing drag for 40 years. So, yeah, fascinating stuff.
Yeah, we actually did talk back at 4ZZZ on this subject it was over the Easter weekend, not soon after that. And, yeah, there are some concepts out there that need to be corrected in terms of some people really don't know what to make of drag. For some other people, it's a way of accepting the gay community.
What were the concepts that needed to be corrected?
Thinking that it's anything less than a professional thing, perhaps at times to do. So, I spoke to Trixie Lamont, who's a performer. She's a transgender drag artist at the Beat Nightclub here. And she was saying that it's a perfectly respectable way for young people to actually work. So there are especially young people who are aware that they have a transgender identity. And this can be a way of doing genuine work that's entertaining, rewarding, well accepted. Where some other people think that, it's just a matter of people putting on a frock and looking silly and dancing down the street during Mardi Gras. It doesn't have to be like that.
No. Well, the young chap that I was talking to the other night, his mother kind of looked at him a bit strangely when he told her that, you know, he was doing drag. And then, of course, he told her how much money he was getting from each show. And they kind of put pay to all the concerns. It was like, yeah, go for it.
Right.
The same chap has been gay bashed 3 times, but in straight clothing, if there can be straight clothing. But he's never been attacked at all when he's been in drag, but it's been when he's just been walking down the street by himself in normal clothing, which is another fascinating kind of aspect to the whole thing as well.
Yeah, it's outrageous. I often wonder at times, I was cycling away from the World AIDS Day, like the Candlelight Vigil, it was actually, this year, and we just packed everything up. I was the host for the event here. And as I'm cycling away, I could swear that somebody just muttered faggot as I cycled past them. And it's hard to tell at times whether you're being paranoid.
That's the big thing. That's the big thing that I find with interviewing gay guys as well, is that how much of that homophobia is actually within themselves and how much is it coming from outside. I have a feeling that a lot of it is inside each of us, that because we don't see images of ourselves, acceptable images of ourselves really in kind of mainstream media, because we don't see that every day, we feel isolated and alone, and I think that breeds a wee bit of paranoia, I guess. I know that if I can, you know, when I'm walking down the street, I can feel like I'm standing out, even though there's nothing kind of outwardly different about me. But I do find that I get these kind of paranoid feelings that, yes, I am being watched and talked about. I think sometimes that may be true, but often I think it's maybe my own personality, my own kind of self doing that to myself. And one of the really neat things about doing these recordings is I've found that other people are just like that as well. So that, you know, it's a bit of a relief for me thinking that it's not just me that's kind of going a bit kind of around the bend.
That's right. Well, you actually work for National Radio in New Zealand, the version of Australia's Radio National. And how long have you been working with them for?
Well, on and off for about 9 years now.
Fine. So did you do an apprenticeship?
No. I went straight from school. I was luckily I was in one of the last intakes of technicians that they took on, and then they had a kind of a training. Basically, it was on-the-job training. I mean, you had a bit of kind of theory taught you, but really it's, you know, this is the tape machine, this is the computer, this is what we do, and here's how you do it. And so it kind of started off doing operating, which is pushing all the buttons and making sure all the technical equipment works fine. Doing that live on air for like a talk back kind of show type thing. Then moving into recording interviews, music and speech compilation, documentary making, and that kind of gave me a really firm footing in the kind of technical aspects of radio and sound recording.
And so now what you specialise in is spoken word recording. So you've been, you contacted us through email and offered us copies of CDs of recordings that you've done of people speaking about things. Like one recent recording was of two men who are radio personalities talking about how they've dealt with the fact that they are gay, that they're involved in radio, but they weren't necessarily happy about speaking out as gay men. And
yes, I think one of... I have a feeling it's a generational thing. Now, these two guys were, are in their 50s. That kind of area, anything around the gay issue kind of thing, is not really talked about in this country for that age group, I don't think. We had law reform here in 85, 86. Prior to that, it was illegal. So when these guys were growing up, it just wasn't an option. You just were not gay, as in the sense of the word that it is now. And so when they were growing up and when they had their first jobs in broadcasting, I mean, both of them have been in broadcasting for 30 or 40 years, it just wasn't mentioned. And so I guess you can really understand why they didn't push that, even when they had the chance of maybe kind of destigmatizing it. They just felt, well, they just didn't feel the need to talk about it.
Mm. One man says when law reform came through even that it seemed like, well, now that we've got this, let's not make too much of a fuss about it because people will think that we've got a special right rather than just something we should have always had.
Mm. Mm. I don't know what it's like over there in Brisbane, but in this country, in New Zealand at the moment, there's, I think, quite a strong feeling of wanting to assimilate with mainstream culture. I've found a lot of gay men just not wanting to be out there. They just want to live happily in the suburbs and do normal, what you would say, heterosexual things like buy a house, settle down, and have a nice life. Thank you very much. I have a feeling that some of that kind of activism that was so apparent, especially around law reform and prior to that, that kind of activist spirit has gone a wee bit. And I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but it does seem to be kind of dribbling away somewhere.
Hmm. Yeah, there's not an increasing number of people necessarily attending political events here, like the Pride Festival. It gets marginally bigger each year, but it's not in proportion to the number of people that there are who must be exclusively homosexual in Brisbane. So there are a lot of people very keen to just sit back and let one or two people especially do lots of work and then think, oh, well, it's good when we get some benefit. But if those couple of people really didn't take some risks, then there would be no benefits coming through.
I have a feeling that maybe that's always been the case, that here I am contradicting myself because I talk to a number of guys that, younger guys that say, oh yes, look at the good old days when everyone was active and everyone was proactive about, you know, pushing homosexuality forward and saying, yes, it's okay. We're talking about like in the law reform days of, you know, 85, 86. But then speaking to guys that are around about 30 or 40 who were active around that time, they were saying that, well, they tell me that not everyone was like that, that there are large numbers of gay people that just stayed inside and didn't want to know, were quite happy not to, you know, kind of be out there, be yeah. pushing for it.
In America, there's an excellent program called Chasing the Rainbow, and this particular program about youth in America and how some youth in, I think it's Massachusetts, they lobbied their local state to put through a law that would protect students against discrimination on all bases, like including like race, religion, like gender and sexual orientation. And the students themselves, like the youth, had to actually lobby to do this because they were getting no support from the older members of the community, the gay and lesbian community. But they said what worried them the most was that there were lots of gay and lesbian students who said to them, look, it's just part of life. You have to accept that you're going to get harassed. That happens at school. You know, you survive it. You get on with your life. But unfortunately, like some people aren't going to survive the harassment, and I think this is why there needs to be some visibility.
What's the school system like in Brisbane for that?
In that respect, there is no like legal protection. There would be a recommendation for people to adopt like appropriate courses that support students. But still, like Family Planning Queensland, at the moment they've got a couple of workshops that they've organised. The second one will be starting shortly, encouraging teachers and principals and such educators to come and get a bigger understanding about what happens as far as discrimination goes, especially homophobia within a school, and how to act to prevent it from being a problem in the first place. But it's not compulsory, and I think it'll take quite some time before many schools decide to pick up on that sort of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as I was saying, that the school that I used to go to, where I interviewed the principal just yesterday, he was saying that it's a case of, they don't actually have human relationships education as a subject. So what he does during religious instruction is he'll mention some supportive things about relationships, but he doesn't mention same-sex relationships. And it's a shame, because you need to be aware more often that there really is quite likely to be students in your class who are gay. And it may take them a few years to realise it. So the support has to come before the awareness, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's why, yeah, the visibility in school, but also in the media, is so important, to not only just see the stereotypical kind of campy images or the sitcoms that are so prevalent, you know, from the US with gay characters in them, but just to see normal gay people talking about normal gay things. And I mean, I do think that the gay lifestyle has difficulties associated with it that don't crop up in just straight relationships, or for straight individuals. And I think those have to be talked about, and they have to be seen in public to educate, to validify, I guess. I find that one of the main reasons why I'm doing these sound documentaries is that at the end of it, I find I feel a bit more valid as a person. And I know that, I suppose this is a selfish thing on my part, that I am doing stuff to make me feel better. Hopefully at the end of the day it's making other people feel better because they can relate to some of the things that some of the guys are saying. It's all about being able to see yourself or hear yourself back and say, actually, it's not just me. There are other people like me feeling the same things, going through the same experiences, and willing to share that. I find that there aren't many places where gay guys can just share their thoughts about things in a safe way. I mean, you don't do that on the gay scene. I mean, you're going up to, you know, to a pickup joint to pick someone up. It's not about kind of having a deep and meaningful conversation. And I don't think there are many places where guys can just talk. So that's one of the neat things about the sound documentaries, is that with radio, you are talking on a one-to-one basis. even though you're broadcasting to, say, to 10, 20,000 people or, you know, 100,000 people, you're being very intimate on the other end where it's just one listener and a voice coming through a speaker. And so I think you can be very intimate and you can talk about things that you don't often get a chance to talk about.
Who do you think should be represented in these styles of documentation that you're doing?
Who do I think should be represented?
Yeah, because a temptation might be to just go for people who are prominent, for example.
I like ordinary people, and I say ordinary people in quotation marks because, I mean, everyone is completely extraordinary and they all have different things that they bring to life and everyone's story is different. I think I have got the most amazing stories out of people that you just, you know, that don't have the high-profile jobs, that, you know, that aren't maybe the greatest speakers or aren't out there all the time. To me, that's where the most exciting stories lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about facts and figures, the documentaries that I'm doing. It's not about facts and figures. It's about personal experiences and trying to get a feeling for a subject. It's quite an organic way of program making, I guess, in that I do the interviews, and they're quite prolonged interviews. I mean, they would go on for about an hour, each interview. And from that, the shape of the documentary, which turns into about a half-hour piece, kind of shapes from that. So it's quite organic.
Yep. You're saying that in, say, for national radio in New Zealand, there's really no programming that's geared towards gay men or lesbians because they consider like niche programming is a problem because everyone will want a piece of the pie. But how are gay voices then being represented in mainstream media in New Zealand?
In radio, there are no weekly programs at all. There is no news. I have to qualify that. Public radio, for national radio where I work, there are no gay weekly programs. There are weekly programs on community access stations, which target very small areas. Like there'll be an access station in Wellington, one in Auckland, one in Christchurch, and they have their own audiences. And they generally have like an hour or two a week, which is fantastic. So at least there is some gay content going on there. But as a national broadcaster, national radio doesn't do anything like that. There is no news agency in the radio area putting out gay news. We do have a weekly national gay newspaper that comes out, and also a monthly one as well. And in TV, we've got a half-hour show called Queer Nation, which is great. That happens every week. Although it gets broadcast something like about 11:30 at night on a Friday night, so it's fantastic that they're making it. It's the programmers that you have to actually question why they're putting it on so late, especially when it's basically general information, education content.
Especially if the community television is something like Bruce 31 here, where you've got like the Butcher's Show on several times during the day.
Sure.
Not high access times.
Unfortunately, television isn't a big thing in New Zealand. We have two state channels and a commercial channel as well. The two state channels are completely driven by money. Nothing at all like SBS over in Australia. That they're basically commercially driven, and so if you can't pull the ratings, or if you can't pull the audience, then basically you don't get on air.
Well, strange thing here, like there's a program presented by drag queen Tamara Tonight here, and like that actually pulls something like 20% of the viewing audience when it's on air on a Tuesday night, and then repeated on a Saturday. So it shows that that style of programming can perform really well.
What kind of content is on the program?
It's more like tele-shopping or infomercial, but it does have some community support as well. And Tamara is actually nominating for Lord Mayor in the upcoming state elections, or sorry, Brisbane City Council elections, which would be quite good because like she's a very intelligent, together, strong person. So I don't know if she'll become Lord Mayor, but she'll give the media a shake, and people have taken her seriously, like no one's making fun of her.
Fantastic, yeah. We've actually got two transsexual mayors in New Zealand, one in the Wairarapa, which is just about half an hour's drive from Wellington, and also one down south. And it is just the most wonderful thing to see them on TV campaigning and just being out there, not being out there as a transsexual mayor, but as a very intelligent, or as two very intelligent mayors. It's just wonderful to see, and it's a secondary plus that they are transsexual and are achieving great things, and also are looking out for, you know, the gay, lesbian, transgender, bi communities. I just think it's such a valuable thing to do, not only for future generations, but for the interviewer, for me, and for you as well. Or whoever is doing it, that you open yourself up to new ideas, new ways of thinking about things. I think you become, well, I hope we become less judgmental once we actually sit down and start talking to people about things, and less dismissive of situations. I know that's what's happened with me. I think I've become a lot more open to all different types of people, and I think that's a great thing.
Yep. Well, Gareth, you do have a website that people can access to get samples of the work that you've done and a list of the work you've done as well. I haven't actually looked at the site, but this is stated on your CDs. So how do people actually find that website?
Sure. The website address is http://www.freespeech.org/Gareth. That site contains most of the documentaries in a real audio format, so you can actually hear them in their entirety live on the internet at any time. You can also download them and listen to them. They're all freely available for educational use or for broadcast. Basically, the site's there to get the sound out to as many people as possible and to enable people just to maybe hear themselves, I guess.
Great. Okay. Well, look after yourself. Thanks a lot, Gareth.
Okay. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.